Live from the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff. To join us on the air, just dial toll-free 1-888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. To find out more about the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast, just log on to our website at equip.org. And now, here's the host of the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. A lot of callers already hanging on, but before we go to our callers, I do want to spend a little time talking about an article that appeared in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal by David Wood. It's titled Muhammad and the Messiah, Comparing the Central Figures of Islam and Christianity. And of course, according to Islam, the Quran is not only credible, it is God's only uncorrupted revelation. And therefore, if it is to be compared with anything in Christianity, it is to be compared with Christ rather than the Bible. Of course, in truth, the Quran is replete with questionable ethics, particularly when it comes to the equality of women. Think about the fact that the testimony in a court of law by a woman does not carry as much weight as it does by a man. Instead, her testimony is valued at half a man's testimony. In fact, her legal statements cannot even be accepted as true unless there are two women testifying. Furthermore, the Quran dictates that when a business transaction takes place between two people, two men must witness it, or one man and two women. That way, if one woman forgets what transpired, the second of the two may remind the other. Now, obviously, that brings up the question as to why Islam is considered politically correct by so many people in Western culture. We're going to talk to David Wood about that. He joins me right now on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hi, David.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing good. The question about the political correctness of Islam in the West, while many of the things taught in Quranic lore seem to militate against everything that we would think we should hold dear as those who are enlightened in Western culture.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and it's really shocking, especially when you consider how some of the most vehement defenders of Islam here in the West are liberals, right? So, I mean, people who whose values would be most opposed to what we find in Islam are the first people to defend it. In other words, they seem to hate their own culture here so much that they'll praise anything that's against it, including Islam.
I want to get your perspective. I was in Iran speaking at the University of Tehran not all that long ago, and while I was there, I found out a lot about burqas. And the basic information I got over and over again was that how a woman dresses is traditional and up to her. If she wants to only reveal her eyes, that's up to her. If she wants to reveal a full face, that's up to her. If she wants to wear black, that's up to her. If she wants to wear a colored shawl, it's up to her. What's the story on the Quranic ruling with respect to the veil?
Well, you do have some passages in the Quran that talk about women covering themselves. Surah 24, I believe, verses 30 to 31 talks about women drawing their veil over themselves. The problem is, some of the terms in the Quran are open to more than one translation, so some will give a more conservative translation of a passage, and others will give a less conservative translation of a passage. Basically, as far as Islamic history is concerned, the practice of the burqa actually predates Islam. And I think we have historical references going back to either the second or the third century, talking about Arab women who would veil themselves except for one eye or both eyes. And it said that they would rather see than be seen, referring to the Arab women. And this eventually became part of the practice of Islam because one of Muhammad's followers saw one of Muhammad's wives going out to use the bathroom, and he complained to Muhammad, said, "Hey, shouldn't we be having your wives behave a little bit more modestly here than them going outside to go to the bathroom and people seeing them walking around out there?" And so that's when the rule came down, at least that Muhammad's wives had to cover themselves or screen themselves so that people couldn't see them. And then you have other passages which seem to indicate that women have to wear at least some kind of head covering, like the hijab is the one where you can still see the woman's full face. You see a cover on her head, that would be the hijab. And some Muslim women prefer to take the more conservative view of the just leaving their eyes open. And in some places, they won't even uncover their eyes. They'll have a little screen over their eyes.
Talk about something you write about in the article, the doctrine of abrogation. This is so often misunderstood, and yet I think it's one of the most salient things for us to understand with respect to the Quran, because as a result of this doctrine, you can make the Quran anything you want to make it. You can make it a book of peace. You can make it a book of violence and war.
Yeah, and the issue of abrogation is really the basis for the differences of interpretation between what we might call westernized Muslims, who will tell you Islam is peaceful and tolerant, and classical Muslims, Muslims who actually follow what Islam teaches as it was meant to be taught. And the basis for this is classical Muslims and westernized Muslims have two different methods of interpretation. So, for instance, you open up the Quran, if you go to Surah 2:256, it says there is no compulsion in religion. Well, that's a very nice teaching, right? I would say amen to that. No compulsion in religion. Don't force people. Don't force people to submit if they don't believe. But you open up other passages of the Quran, Surah 9:29, for instance, which says, fight those who do not believe in Allah. And it specifically there refers to Jews and Christians in that verse. And in the next verse says, we're not real believers because we say Jesus is the Son of God. So we're not true believers in Allah. And so Muslims are commanded to fight us. Well, you know, what's going on here? One passage says no compulsion in religion. Sounds like, you know, peace and tolerance. Another passage says you're going to fight people based on what they believe about God. And how westernized Muslims reconcile these passages, they basically take the one they like better, and in this case it would be they like there's no compulsion in religion better because they were raised, you know, in the West with around the same values and going to the same schools that the rest of us are familiar with. So they like that one, and then they'll use that to reinterpret the teaching that they don't like. So they'll say, okay, whatever the Quran means when it says fight those who do not believe, it can't mean fight those who do not believe, because that would go against there's no compulsion in religion. So they will go with the one they like better, the one that fits in with Western values more, and then they'll use those to reinterpret passages that are harsher. That's how Muslims in the West interpret things, and it goes totally against the classical method of interpretation that goes back to Muhammad himself. And for a Muslim, basically for the first 12 centuries of Islam, the method of interpretation was actually very easy. Muslims have collections of various texts. They have their hadith. These are narrations about Muhammad and the situations he was in. They have the sirah. These are like straightforward biographies. You know, Muhammad was born. Here's what he did during his life. Here's how he died. And they have massive commentaries on every verse of the Quran. So for a classical Muslim who's looking at a passage like there's no compulsion in religion and fight those who do not believe in Allah, what am I going to do here? Well, the only question for a classic Muslim not influenced by Western values, the only question was which one came last? Very simple method of interpretation. I have two verses. They seem to be in conflict here. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to go with whatever one Allah revealed last, because according to the Quran, in Surah 2:106, that's Allah's method of that's Allah's method of revelation. Sometimes he cancels things that came earlier, and he gives something better. And so when a Muslim reads that, the method of interpretation is go with the last one. And that's the only question. It's a very simple, straightforward method of interpretation. Let me go back to the texts that talk about when these verses were revealed, and whichever one came last, that's the one that applies to Muslims today. But what you find is the peaceful teachings of the Quran were among the earliest teachings of the Quran when Muhammad was a persecuted prophet in Mecca, and in the early stages of when he traveled to Medina, and there was a large Jewish community there, a large pagan Arab community there, and during these early stages, when Muhammad's a persecuted prophet, and then when he starts to gain a little bit of power, the revelations are pretty peaceful, and it's later when Muslims start gaining political power and can actually start fighting that we see the more violent passages. And so from the perspective of any classical Muslim scholar, and from the perspective of what the Quran itself lays down, it's the violent passages that are supposed to apply. In the peaceful teachings, those were abrogated. Those were canceled by later passages. Whereas if you go up to just about any Muslim living in the West today, they're going to point to the peaceful passages and say, this is what Islam teaches. The violent stuff, that has nothing to do with our religion.
Which kind of leads me to the heart of the article you prepare for the Christian Research Journal, Muhammad and the Messiah, talking about the moral differences between the two of them, pretty significant.
Oh, no question. And I don't think you could have two people more radically different than Jesus and Muhammad.
And unfortunately, what you have so often is Muhammad and Messiah put on the same footing. But as you demonstrated in the article, Jesus cared for the poor and downtrodden, certainly did not have the kind of view of women that was espoused by Muhammad. Muhammad had a less than acceptable view with respect to women and morality.
Oh, no question. And really, lots of people in the West would be horrified if they knew about some of the things Muhammad did. So the most glaring example here would be his relationship with a 9-year-old girl. He married a girl named Aisha, who was the daughter of one of his best friends, closest companions, Abu Bakr. And Aisha was 6 years old when the marriage was arranged, and she was 9 years old when the marriage was consummated. And the Quran, this is entirely in accord with the Quran, which in Surah 65, verse 4, you have to get a good translation. If you think you don't have a good translation, and go to any commentary, the main Muslim commentaries are all available online. But Surah 65, verse 4 talks about what to do if you're divorcing a girl who hasn't yet reached the age of puberty, in order to make sure that she didn't get pregnant somehow. Well, if it's telling you how to divorce a girl who hasn't reached puberty, and it's telling you, to wait 3 months to make sure that she's not pregnant, this is assuming, of course, that you have you've been having sex with this prepubescent girl, and this is exactly what we find Muhammad himself doing. And so if any of your listeners have heard that and were wondering if it's true, no question. Some of the other issues, Muhammad married the divorced wife of his own adopted son. He went over to the house of his adopted son one day and was greeted by the wife. And the wife, her name was Zainab, and she was dressed in what today we'd call like a nightie or a negligee or something like that. And Muhammad saw her, and he started praising God, and apparently he got a revelation at that moment that he was going to have her for himself. And when his adopted son, Zayd, heard that Muhammad was attracted to his wife, he divorced her. And so Muhammad then married her. Zainab was one of at least nine wives that Muhammad had at once, depending on the source. Both of them considered reliable. he had at least 9 or at least 11 wives at one time. So we'll be as generous as possible. He had at least 9 wives at one time. And the problem is, according to the Quran, Surah 4:3, Muslims are allowed to marry no more than 4 women. And so how do Muslims get out of this when their prophet says, hey, you guys get 4, but I get more? Well, the justification is that Muhammad received yet another special revelation in Surah 33, verse 50, saying that he gets to marry more wives than his own revelations allow to other women. And so basically, when we go through the Muslim sources, we find issue after issue like this, where Muhammad gets special privileges that no one else gets, and it usually involves women.
We'll continue the discussion in just a moment. Right after the break, I want to talk about the religious message that you find in the Quran compared to that what we find in the Bible. And then also, why do people, even in the highest echelons of Western society, people like Barack Obama, seem to speak in such a glowing way about Islam and the Quran? Be right back in just a few moments, not only with a further discussion, but your questions as well.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's flagship publication designed to equip you in doctrine, defense, and discernment. When you subscribe to the journal, you'll receive a magazine that's not only scholarly in its substance, but beautiful in its presentation, easily accessible and relevant, with stunning graphics and rich content written by respected theologians and communicators. The Christian Research Journal is a must-have resource that no Christian home should be without. Start your subscription today. Call 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff will be right back with more after this.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love, and every verse that includes love will appear. Also included is the entire 2-hour audio gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This 2-hour audio gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.
Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless processes, or created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work, and even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. That's why we want to send you a copy of Hank's Creation Answer Book in appreciation for your gift of ministry support today. The Creation Answer Book puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Your gift is important, supporting more of the broadcast and resources that have changed your life. So please give today by calling 888-7000-CRI or visiting equip.org. That's equip.org. And let us rush you your copy of the Creation Answer Book. Thank you for your partnership. It seems like a no-brainer. If God is a God of love, there's no way He'd condemn anyone to suffer eternally in hell simply for not believing in Jesus, right? Christians who believe in an eternal hell have been accused of following a cruel and unjust God. Millions of atheists claim it's the reason they can't embrace Christianity. Do we need to abandon the concept of hell? Hank's new book, Afterlife, to be released next spring, answers this and many other questions about our eternal future. But because you need to be equipped now with answers about hell, we're offering you a sneak peek booklet, Life After Life After Life, for your ministry support today. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is entirely listener supported, so your gift matters. Be one of the first to have your copy of Life After Life After Life. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The greatest apologetic for Christianity is its founder, all that the Lord Jesus was, said, and did. Muslims, too, believe that their founder stands apart and that his book, the Quran, is the greatest apologetic. A natural avenue for Christian apologetics to Muslims, then, is to contrast the words and works of Jesus and Muhammad. The latest issue of the Christian Research Journal delves into a comparison of the central figures of Islam and Christianity. Subscribe today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Once again, here's CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Having a discussion with David Wood, he wrote an article for the current edition of the Christian Research Journal. It's titled Muhammad and the Messiah, Comparing the Central Figures of Islam and Christianity. We'll conclude our discussion in just a few moments, but and then go to your phone calls. But one of the things, David, that I was struck with reading the article, particularly the things that you talk about with respect to the morality that is part and parcel of Islam, it seems to me almost unthinkable that Western figures as high as the President of the United States would say things like, Islam shares common principles of justice and progress and tolerance and dignity of all human beings. These kinds of statements where it seems to me that simply is not the case.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's not the case. And it's not the case according to the Quran. It's not the case according to Muhammad. It's not the case according to Islam. It's only the case according to, you know, kind of Western leaders and the media who keep spinning it that way. But just as a couple of examples, Surah 98 verse 6 talks about Christians and Jews who reject the truth of Islam, and it calls us the worst of creatures. So Christians and Jews who reject Islam are called in the Quran the worst of creatures. And in Surah 9 verse 30 calls down a curse from Allah on us and asks Allah to fight us. And the verse before that commands Muslims to violently subjugate us because of our beliefs. And you can compare this with what the Quran says about Muslims, where in Surah 3, verse 110, Muslims are called the best of peoples. So Muslims are the best of peoples. Christians and Jews are the worst of creatures. And one of those groups has to violently subjugate the other group. The Muslims are required to violently subjugate non-Muslims. And so how can you say that this has any relationship at all to Western tolerance and democracy? It just doesn't. It boggles the mind.
One of the proofs that you expose so often you hear someone say, well, you know, the Quran is an absolutely eloquent, beautiful masterpiece, a tapestry that could not be anything but divine in origin, and therefore you should believe in the Quran. But it seems to me, and you expose this in the article, that if you actually start reading the Quran, you're not all that impressed with its tapestry.
I'll say right here, reading the Quran is probably the most boring thing anyone could do. And I want to be clear, I'm not just saying that because I debate Muslims and I criticize Islam, so I'm not just trying to be mean. Muslims have other sources, which are their historical sources, like the Hadith. I think the Hadith are very interesting. It's very interesting reading material. But the Quran itself, I believe it was Anthony Flew who said, the atheist who became some kind of theist shortly before he died, but Anthony Flew said when he was comparing Christianity and Islam, I believe it was Flew who said, regardless of your theological perspective, no one would doubt that the Bible is great literature. And then he said, to read the Quran is to do penance. So you're actually, like, it's like you're punishing yourself for your sins if you read the Quran. But this is a an argument that, that's very common. The Quran is so wonderful. The Quran is so wonderful; it can only come from God, and it's an argument that wasn't taken very seriously in Muhammad's own time. He used to have people who would follow him around. So during his time, when he was in Mecca, and he was preaching this as his main argument, there was a man named Al-Nadir who used to follow him around, and Muhammad would get up and deliver a revelation, and Al-Nadir would stand up right behind him and deliver a similar, similar in style and content chapter, and then say, in what way is Muhammad's revelation better than what I just said? And he would challenge the people there. And Muslims, as soon as they got the chance, as soon as they became more powerful, they just killed him. They killed him. Apparently, they couldn't respond. But Islam, using this argument for the first 12 years or so that Muhammad was claiming to be a prophet, he only won a few dozen followers. He only got a few dozen converts using that message. It wasn't until later when he left Mecca and the message changed to, join me and we'll split the spoils. And if you die in battle, you will go to paradise and you will get your virgins. And if you survive, you're going to divide the spoils of the war and you're going to take your female captives. And so either way, you win. Now join me. That's when he started getting the large numbers of converts. So for the first more than decade of his life, when he was actually trying to present arguments for why people should believe in him, he didn't win very many followers. When his message changed, that's when he started getting thousands of converts.
Talking about an article in the Christian Research Journal titled Muhammad and the Messiah, comparing the central figures of Islam and Christianity with David Wood, the author. A couple of other things I want to discuss with you in the article, rich with all kinds of wonderful content, worth the subscription of the journal in and of itself. A lot of people have heard of satanic verses, don't really know what they are. Enlighten us.
The satanic verses is basically a name given to probably one of the, well, definitely one of the most embarrassing moments in Muhammad's career. And that the story goes something like this. And I have 37 sources on the satanic verses, giving one version or another of the story. So 37 Muslim sources I have right here on the satanic verses. So this is something that goes back to the earliest Muslim sources. Basically, the story goes like this. Muhammad really wanted his tribe, the Quraysh, that was the tribe that he was from, he really wanted the Quraysh to convert to Islam, but they wouldn't. And they were very offended at these revelations that he was given, which were condemning their paganism, their polytheism. And so he started longing for a revelation that would help them convert to Islam. And one day, he got what he was looking for. He was reciting Surah 53, which was in the process of being revealed to him. And when he came to a verse that said, have you not heard of Alat, Alusa, and Manat? These are the three pagan goddesses of the Quraysh tribe, Alat, Alusa, and Manat. He said, these are the exalted cranes whose intercession is to be hoped for. So the meaning to them was, these are the exalted cranes, these are birds, and they can intercede, their intercession is to be hoped for. So they can intercede with Allah. So these three goddesses, they're not on the same level as Allah, but you can still pray to them because they can carry your messages to Allah like birds carrying your, you know, carrying something up to heaven. So Muhammad delivered these verses as part of the Quran, saying that there's Allah and then there are three goddesses that you can also pray to. Muhammad bowed down in honor of the new revelation. All his followers bowed down in honor. They would bow down when a new Quran revelation came. And the pagans joined in and bowed down as well. Muslims were happy. All the pagans were happy. They were all now one big happy family Muhammad had approved of their gods. But a little while later, Muhammad came back and said that Satan had tricked him into delivering these verses. That he was receiving the revelation from the angel Gabriel, and Satan kind of snuck in there and gave him some extra material that he wasn't supposed to get. And so he took those revelations back and said, in effect, the devil made me do it. That Satan tricked me into delivering these revelations. And after that, Muhammad was certainly considered someone you're not going to take very seriously as a prophet. So that's that again. I have variations of that story in 37 Muslim sources talking about Muhammad receiving these revelations. And I mean, the implication is pretty obvious. This is a man who, according to his own sources, not according to Christian sources, not according to Jewish sources, according to the sources of his own followers, he could not tell the difference between a revelation from God and a revelation from Satan. And that should be eye-opening.
Small wonder, then, that at one point late in life, Muhammad said he was the victim of a magic spell lasting around a year. One other question that I want to ask you, and that has to do with the Islamic dilemma that you read about in the article.
Oh, we call it the Islamic dilemma. It's an argument that Sam Shamoon and I use, my partner Sam Shamoon and I use in debates. And what's interesting is you mentioned at the beginning of the program that Muslims regard the Quran as the only perfect book, perfect revelation of God, and that is the orthodox position in Islam, that the Quran is the only uncorrupt book. What's interesting, and what most Muslims don't know, because they don't read their own sources, is that you would never in a million years get that impression from the Quran itself. The impression you get from the Quran itself is that the scriptures of the Christians, the scriptures of the Jews, were revealed by Allah. They have been perfectly preserved, and they are authoritative for Christians and Jews. So let me just read, just so people don't think I'm making this up, I'll read a couple of verses very quickly. Surah 3, 3 through 4, says that Allah has revealed to you the book with truth, verifying that which is before it. And he revealed the Torah and the gospel aforetime, a guidance for the people. And he sent the Quran. So the Torah, that's the scriptures of the Jews. The gospel, that's the scripture of the Christians. And what's very interesting is that in Surah 10, Muhammad was actually having doubts about his revelations. He was doubting that these revelations were from God. And Allah commands him what to do in chapter 10, verse 94 of the Quran. Allah says, this is his advice to Muhammad, who's having doubts. But if you are in doubt as to what we have revealed to you, ask those who read the book before you. Certainly the truth has come to you from your Lord, therefore you should not be of the disputers. So he says, ask those who read the book before you. Christians and Jews are called the people of the book. So Muhammad, who's having doubts, Allah tells him, if you're having doubts, go ask the Christians and the Jews about this stuff that we're revealing to you. So it says here that the Christians and Jews were reading the book. That's how Muhammad could go and ask them about what's in the book to see if it lines up with his revelations. But that only makes sense if Christians and Jews, during Muhammad's time, still had the book. Now, probably the most interesting verse, Surah 5, verse 47, says, let the people of the gospel judge by what Allah hath revealed therein. If any fail to judge by the light of what Allah hath revealed, they are no better than those who rebel. So the Quran commands Christians to judge by the gospel. This only makes sense if we still have the gospel. So you find this with the Jews, telling the Jews to judge by the Torah. Christians are told to judge by the gospel. And in the Quran over and over again, it says that no one can corrupt Allah's word. So the impression you get from the Quran itself is that the Bible has been perfectly preserved. It can't be corrupted. But if that's the case, then Islam has to be false, because it doesn't line up with what's in the Bible.
We'll be right back in just a moment with more of the Bible Instrument broadcast.
As an organ of the Christian Research Institute, the Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. The Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff will return in a moment. It seems like a no-brainer. If God is a God of love, there's no way He'd condemn anyone to suffer eternally in hell simply for not believing in Jesus, right? Christians who believe in an eternal hell have been accused of following a cruel and unjust God. Millions of atheists claim it's the reason they can't embrace Christianity. Do we need to abandon the concept of hell? Hank's new book, Afterlife, to be released next spring, answers this and many other questions about our eternal future. But because you need to be equipped now with answers about hell, we're offering you a sneak peek booklet, Life After Life After Life, for your ministry support today. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is entirely listener supported, so your gift matters. Be one of the first to have your copy of Life After Life After Life. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love and every verse that includes love will appear. Also included is the entire 2-hour audio gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This 2-hour audio gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching graphics with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Should Christians attend same-sex weddings? Would saying yes signal an endorsement? Would saying no signal a lack of commitment to the loved one? There are no easy answers. Other topics include confronting the apologetic challenges of a secular culture, reflections on the girl with the dragon tattoo, sci-fi, free will, and the problem of evil, Muhammad and the Messiah, comparing the central figures of Islam and Christianity, what has poetry to do with evangelism, robbing Paul to pay Peter and James, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. Near-death experiences, some of them seem so convincing and seem to offer comforting proof of life after death. But if they're real, why do they differ so markedly from what the Bible has to say about our eternal future? Learn what's really going on. Just for ministry friends like you, we've created the new booklet, Life After Life After Life, a sneak peek at Hank's upcoming book, Afterlife, and our gift when you support the broadcast with a gift today. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Here's more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Again, talking to David Wood. He is the host of ABN's live talk show, Jesus or Muhammad. He's participated in more than 30 moderated public debates with Muslims in the United States and Great Britain, an authority on the issue of Islam, and an incredible article, again, the title, Muhammad and the Messiah, Comparing the Central Figures of Islam and Christianity. And just before we went to break, you were saying, David, that if the Gospels are reliable, Muhammad cannot be a prophet because the Gospels contradict Muhammad's teachings. On the other hand, if the Gospels are unreliable, Muhammad cannot be a prophet either. So either way, they have an Islamic dilemma. What I want to ask you at this point in the conversation is what can we do as Christians to always be ready to give an answer? And what do you see as the prospects of making an impact on Islam?
Christians, I think, need to do a couple of things. One, they need to get down some responses to basic Muslim arguments. If you were to walk up to some Muslims right now, and the Muslims were going to challenge you and were going to criticize your beliefs, I can name for you exactly what they're going to say. I can tell you right now exactly what those Muslims are going to say, how they're going to criticize Christianity. And it's really only four or five main objections that you hear over and over and over again. Things like, well, your Bible's been corrupted. Where did Jesus say, I am God? How can God die? You believe Jesus is God, and yet you believe that Jesus died. So you believe God died. It's a couple of a small handful of objections like that, and that kind of means two things. On the one hand, it means that Muslims aren't getting answers to these objections, because if they were, they wouldn't keep saying the same things over and over and over again. That's the negative side. They're not getting answers. The positive side is, if Muslims are only using between four and six main objections, that means it's pretty easy for Christians to sit down and say, all right, how am I going to answer these objections when they come up? And it's not 3 or 4 years worth of training. You could go through this in a couple of hours and have a good idea of how you're going to respond to the objections that you know for a fact are going to come up. And I've told people this while speaking, people who are going out to share the gospel with Muslims, and I say, here's what the Muslims are going to say, and every single time they come right back to me and say, wow, everything you said that the Muslims are going to say, that's exactly what they said. So on the one hand, Christians need to get down basic responses to Muslim objections towards Christianity. On the other hand, I'd say not necessarily every Christian, but you know, in every Christian community or every church, there should be some people there who know about Islam, because every single convert I've ever met to Islam, and I hear from them all the time, I meet them all the time, people who've converted to Islam, they never, ever, ever convert to Islam after doing a careful study of the Muslim sources. I have never met anyone who converted to Islam after studying the Muslim sources. What I hear when people tell me why they converted is usually absolute nonsense. I'll sit there going, well, really, where's that? You say Islam supports women's rights? Where are you getting that from? And what you find is that people don't convert based on what Islam actually teaches. They convert based on what the Muslim preacher tells them Islam teaches. And Muslim preachers are actually tailoring their message for a Western audience. So the message usually says, hey, you like tolerance and peace and so on? That's exactly what Islam teaches. You like women's rights? Well, Muhammad was a champion of women's rights. You like science there in the West? Well, the Quran is a fountain of science and learning. And so they make these claims that are, I mean, absolute nonsense if you know what's in the Muslim sources. And here's the key. They only get away with it because there's no one there who can respond to it. There's no one there who can say, actually, that's not what Islam teaches, and I can sit here and prove you wrong. So it's kind of sad that people are converting to Islam based on misinformation, and that they're only able to do this because there aren't people who know enough about Islam to respond. And so on the one hand, Christians need to get down some basic responses to some simple objections by Muslims, and on the other hand, Christians need to learn enough about Islam to respond to a lot of the nonsense that's being spread about Islam.
Sounds like the next article for the Christian Research Journal. Yeah. Look, I want to close with one quick question, and maybe you can't answer this quickly, but as I travel around the world, it seems to me that Islam is growing with vast rapidity and Christianity is on the decline. Certainly, I find that when I go to Europe, and I see that in many other civilized Western cultures. What's your take on that? Is that an overreaction? Is that accurate? And if so, what's the reason? Why is Christianity on the decline and Islam growing so rapidly?
Well, there are several things involved. Christianity certainly on the decline in the West, especially in that, you know, it used to be such a large factor in people's lives, and you know, you look at the younger generation, and it's decreasing. But in certain areas, China, for instance, I mean the church is exploding. So there are places where Christianity is not shrinking. Christianity is going through the roof.
Absolutely.
But there's no question Islam is growing rapidly. Most sources who've taken polls say that Islam is the world's fastest growing religion. But there's a reason for that. The main reason Islam is actually growing rapidly has to do with birth rates. So here in America, people have around two children, families have around two children. In places in the Muslim world, many of which are still classified as third world countries, people are having six or eight or ten children. And so there was a study done a few years ago in Europe, so we're not even talking about third world countries that happen to be Islamic. In Europe, the birth rate of Muslims was three times higher as the birth rate of non-Muslims. And it's just straightforward mathematics. If you have one group, even if that group is smaller, but they're having three times as many babies, it's only a matter of time before they will outnumber you. It might be a century, it might be five centuries, but if they're growing more rapidly than you are, unless something changes, that's going to have an effect down the road. So the reason that Islam is growing rapidly is birth rates, and Muslim children generally remain Muslims. And since there are many Muslim countries that just aren't good places to live, you have lots of those Muslims when they grow up want to get out of there, and then that's when you have lots of immigration around the world. And so the main growth of Islam in Muslim countries is due to birth rates. The main growth of Islam in Western nations, in European nations, is immigration from Muslim countries. You do have converts, and you have around 20,000 converts per year in the United States, but statistics show that within 2 years, around half of those converts will leave Islam. So what you have in the United States is you have around 10,000 lasting converts per year. Now, that's a lot of people, but at 10,000 converts per year, you're not going to spread rapidly, because that would take you 100 years to get a million people. And by the time you get those million people, the population is increased by 50 million people. So Muslims would actually be losing ground as far as converts are concerned. So the main factors, ironically, that Muslims use, and because they'll use this as an argument, they'll say, look, Islam's growing rapidly, it must be from God. Well, the main reason Islam is growing rapidly is because lots of Muslim nations are third world nations, and then people want to get away from those third world nations, and so they come to the West. And I don't know which of those reasons you think can only be from God, but certainly not a persuasive argument.
David Wood, again, he's the article of Muhammad and the Messiah, comparing the central figures of Islam and Christianity. Also, remember that he is host of ABN's live talk show, Jesus or Muhammad, and he has participated in more than 30 moderated public debates with Muslims, in the United States and Great Britain. Great to have you on the broadcast today.
All right, good to be there.
Thank you for the article as well.
All right, brother.
And again, one more reason to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. It is available. You can subscribe in a safe, secure fashion on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Or you can write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Or you can talk to one of our resource consultants at number 888-7000 and the letters CRI. The article is eminently readable. It's very easy to understand. It's clear. It's cogent. But it's also a wake-up call. And it addresses this singular question. Are you willing to do for the truth what cults and world religions are doing for a lie? If the answer is yes, we can as yet have revival in the culture, because that yes answer means reformation in the pew. If the answer is no, we will continue the drift. And David is right. While Western Christianity is markedly on decline. God still has a people. And it is sad to me to see that the growth is not in the West, and that the growth has been relegated to other areas of the world. And here's why I think it's sad. Chuck Colson, before he died, talked to me about the significance of Western civilization built on the DNA of a biblical worldview. In other words, we are, as it were, pygmy standing on the shoulders of giants. Put another way, we have a heritage. And therefore, we cannot lose Western culture. And the real answer is you. Pagans exercise their job description. Now the question is, will you exercise your job description? It's one of the reasons we put resources into your hands like the Christian Research Journal. It's one of the reasons we do the Bible Answer Man broadcast. It's why we have a Christian Research Institute that provides information that's reliable and trustworthy. And it's why we ask you to stand with this ministry prayerfully and financially. And we do need your support this month more than ever. We got way behind because of what might be considered in some circles being politically incorrect at the wrong time. The fact is we need to catch up. We're asking you to help us do that. And do remember, for your gift of $100 or more to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, I'll send you a personalized copy of the Creation Answer book. And we need many to join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team as well. You can do so online at equip.org. Now, a lot of you are hanging on, and my apologies, my interview just kept going on and on and on because it was very interesting and informative. But I'm going to stay right here for an extra hour once we go off the air, continue taking calls, or maybe more correctly stated, I will start taking your calls. My apologies to those who've been hanging for an hour. Please stay with me. I'll answer your question in just a few moments. And for those that want to get their question answered during the next hour, you can call this number as well, 888-ASK-HANK, and I'll try to get to your calls as well. Again, for the next hour, dial 888-ASK-HANK. That translates to 888-275-4265. Hope you are blessed, educated, equipped, and look forward to seeing you tomorrow with more of the Bible Instrument broadcast.
Thank you for joining us today. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith, answer difficult Bible questions, and strengthen believers in their walk with the Lord. To find resources to help equip you, log on to equip.org. That's equip.org. Or call us at 888-7000-CRI. Feel free to write us also at CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by the Christian Research Institute, a ministry supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless processes, or created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work, and even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. That's why we want to send you a copy of Hank's Creation Answer Book in appreciation for your gift of ministry support today. The Creation Answer Book puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Your gift is important, supporting more of the broadcast and resources that have changed your life. So please give today by calling 888-7000-CRI or visiting equip.org. That's equip.org. And let us rush you your copy of the Creation Answer Book. Thank you for your partnership. It seems like a no-brainer. If God is a God of love, there's no way He'd condemn anyone to suffer eternally in hell simply for not believing in Jesus, right? Christians who believe in an eternal hell have been accused of following a cruel and unjust God. Millions of atheists claim it's the reason they can't embrace Christianity. Do we need to abandon the concept of hell? Hank's new book, Afterlife, to be released next spring, answers this and many other questions about our eternal future. But because you need to be equipped now with answers about hell, we're offering you a sneak peek booklet, Life After Life After Life, for your ministry support today. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is entirely listener-supported, so your gift matters. Be one of the first to have your copy of Life After Life After Life. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.